Welcome to Tony Talks Humanity Matters. I'm Tony Julian, and I love to delve deep into matters relating to unifying and uplifting people from nutrition to fitness and spirituality so we can all show up in the world using our unique gifts. And today, I'm really excited because we have a beautiful soul joining us, my special guest, Veronica Vitale. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist with an active private practice in the San Francisco Bay Area, San Jose specifically. She is also a spiritual advisor and the author writing internationally for meditational journals, radio programs, and magazines. She honors all cultures, ages, and spiritualities in her work. Veronica specializes in helping clients heal from PTSD, anxiety, depression, communication problems, relationship issues, individuals dealing with difficult medical diagnosis, and works to help each client find their centered, higher selves, empowering them to develop their own intuition. Fantastic. Welcome, Veronica.
Nice to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So today I'm very excited because we're going to talk about a topic that I mentioned to you before that has just been like near and dear to my heart for at least over a year. And especially as our society has been going through so many changes in the last few years. And that is of desegregating humanity, or being able to, the flip side of that is pulling everybody together around a common purpose and a common feeling and a common acceptance of everyone. And so I know it's a really big topic, but I thought it would be such a great place to start because of your background. And so what I'd love to do is talk about divisiveness and also all the different aspects in our society that we see it, and then kind of later in the program go into what we can do to help turn this around. And I want to start with more about your background, though, how you came to do what you do and what types of situations are you currently helping people get through?
Well, thank you. Relating to division, I think the interesting thing about my background is I worked for many years with perpetrators of domestic violence. They would go to jail or prison. And then when they were released, the judge often ordered them to a 52-week program to understand what they did and to have this, it's a type of therapy, but it's in the group. And I worked with many criminals and helped them understand what happened that led them into a destructive path that made them violent and hurt oftentimes loved ones. And at the same time I did that, I was doing that at nighttime. During the day, I'd get up really early and I'd go over to a local school and do violence prevention with puppets, a program called Second Step. And both groups knew I was working on both groups. So the kids knew I was working with criminals at night, and the criminals knew I was working with children during the day. And a lot of the people that I met that were in my 52-week program were actually really good people. They had stumbled into divisiveness. They had stumbled into having lack of empathy and lack of respect, and developed belief systems that they didn't even know about that embraced power and control and negativity. So when they found out, I mean, as they went through the program, at first they're defensive. They should never have been arrested. Everything was against them. Their partner just happened to walk into the box that they were holding when they were walking down the stairs or whatever. And that's how they ended up in jail. But about 16 weeks into it, they started to realize what happened, the conditioning that they had been through and the belief systems that grew in them, that grew that type of divisive mentality. So they asked me if I could bring the puppets. They asked me if I, even these big guys with tattoos all over and piercings and scary, you know, Veronica, can you bring the puppy and the snail? Because I never learned from my family of origin and my environment how to prevent this. And if I would have had this program when I was little, I wouldn't be here today. So that's kind of two perspectives showing how division can erupt and showing how division can start to heal.
Well, that's such a beautiful thing that you've done, because you were really approaching it from both ends, you know, the prevention and the cure, right? So really, really doing that. And that must have been touching, seeing these, you know, big, hardened people that have just got, you know, I think also these things happen slowly, right? It's like maybe you're raised into it. Maybe you just become accustomed to it little by little. It becomes your normal. And right. So some people don't even realize until they're out of that environment and in this immersion, I mean, really to become immersed in it and change the way they're thinking, change their thoughts, change how they look to other people and respect them or not. Mm-hmm. You know, it exactly. is. It's, yes. So this 52-week program, was it something that you met with them once a week or because that's a long time to.
Once a week.
Yes.
And oftentimes, sadly to think about, but oftentimes one 52-week program wasn't enough. They would finish the 52-week program and within 4 months, maybe reoffend, go back to jail and or prison, then be released and have to go through a second 52-week program. And usually that would do the trick. But for a lot of the people who went through, one time was enough. But I think one thing that I saw that actually brought a change of feelings for me when I first started teaching that class, it was a little frightening, right? You're alone.
Intimidating, sure.
Anything could happen, but they knew I had a direct connection to the judge that was working on their case. So they all knew if anything happened to me, that's going to be really bad for them. And I had all the police reports on my lap. So if they're telling me how it didn't really happen that way, they don't know I'm holding the police reports, seeing everything that they did. So anyway, I started out with feelings of kind of fear, being very careful. You have to build rapport with them in a completely different way than you build rapport with children, for example. But as they went through the program and as we all worked together, we used the Duluth model, which I really, really support still. It gets into the inner belief systems that you might not even know that you have. They started to see, as I said before, they started to see where they went wrong and how many years of conditioning led them to be on the path that they ended up. And you could see in many of them, you could see the sadness kind of spreading across their face. And I had empathy for them. If we could have intervened in their schools when they were little, they wouldn't be here. I didn't feel sorry for them. I shouldn't say that I felt sorry for them. I had empathy for them. And not the kind of empathy that you would display like with your friends and neighbors, the empathy that you have as a therapist, you project still kind of a formality to keep the boundary in place because they've taken many trips down the wrong road, you know, I went from fear, a little bit fear and caution to feeling comfortable with them. And a lot of them turned out to be really good citizens. A lot of them never reoffended.
I think so many people have that goodness in their hearts, right? But they maybe have shut that off or just poor role models or opportunities or peer pressure. So many things that can take us off track as far as being grounded and centered and doing the right thing. And that anger drives us to do a lot of things, feeling that entitlement, like somebody did us wrong and revenge. We see spitefulness and revengefulness in people as well. I'm wondering if you could go into some situations in our society now where we do see divisiveness. Some examples, I'm thinking about social media. I'm thinking about, boy, there are just so many different ways. Can you give us some examples so as we're talking, we can think about the specifics and how it relates to our lives?
Sure. I don't mean this as a joke, but wherever there are two people, there's a potential for great division. That's a little bit of the state of humanity. So that's just to start with. You could be a really wonderful person, and before you know it, you're mad at someone in your family and saying something that you shouldn't be saying, or vice versa. A lot of your viewers probably think that we're going to be talking about politics today because that's been such a huge problem for people on all sides. And we're going to include that, but not just politics. So it can come from politics. It can come from religion. It comes from cultures. It comes from ages. There's something called ageism, that people are actually pretty prejudiced against people who are older. So it can come in different forms, you know, and I think one of the things that leads into it, if that's okay, if I start to mention that,
it
comes from a primitive part of our brain. Back in archaic times, when we were with our group, a hormone was released in our brain called oxytocin, that made us feel rewarded. So our brain liked to be with our group. And then just the opposite of that in archaic time, primitive times, when people from another group would come in, that would be fearful for people in those times. And their amygdala would go off. That's your fear-based part of your brain. Some people say that you could call that going limbic or something. And that's right where the fight or flight part of our brain is. Mm-hmm. And it's instantaneous. So back in archaic times, we had the oxytocin release for our group and the amygdala reaction for people who weren't our group. Flash forward to 2021, we have that same primitive brain reaction today. And we don't know we're having it. When we're with our group, we can have an oxytocin release making us feel good. When we're seeing someone different than us or something that we're not familiar with or something that we thought someone else was distrustful of, we can have the amygdala reaction without using a lot of common sense. And we could take the ball and run with it. So you can see how division, people don't know that's happening. They think they're mad at Republicans or Democrats. They think they're mad at this religion or that religion. They don't know they're having this brain release. And the brain release is good because we do need to be afraid and be able to go into fight or flight if we're around people who are dangerous, who are going to cause harm. And it is good that we have an oxytocin release because it helps us bond with our family. It gives us reward. But we're talking today about where it can go wrong. And for example, the oxytocin release is really just temporary. Because how many times do we say, oh, I'm with my group, I'm with my family, we're happy. And within the hour, everyone in your family's mad at each other.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, you buy something, it makes you feel good for a short time. But it's like, why did I buy that? You know?
Yeah.
It is. It's a kind of that reward. But it is very much back to our survival instincts. And I relate that to nutrition and how, you know, it's our body holds on to our fat stores because of survival, right? It's so much of it is the way our brain works and the way the adrenaline kicks in. And then when the adrenaline kicks in those fearful situations, we don't slow down. We don't think, we just act. And that gets us into trouble too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It leads us into wars. As we go through today, I don't know if we'll have a time to do kind of an assessment of it, but the things that we're going to talk about today that lead into division with individuals and small groups and large groups are actually part of what leadership in the world go through that cause wars. The leadership have all these things going on. So they'll send a couple hundred thousand people over to another country to fight because they haven't been able to learn how to not be divided. More coming on that.
Absolutely. So this brain response is so interesting. And, you know, we were talking a little bit about there's us and then there's them. What actually happens with that? Is it, do people have trouble with empathy? Do they not see the other person as a human being? Like, what are some of those things that go on internally, the kind of that thought process that goes with that?
Exactly. Well, if we take the ball and run with it, as I said before, and we just go all with the oxytocin and that these are our people, and we go all with the amygdala and we just keep it that way and we have no awareness of what's going on, it could really lead us into starting to see the other group is not as good as we are. We could actually start to look down on them. And one of the first thing that goes is empathy. We don't care if some of their individuals or them as a group is having a problem. How many times have you heard people say that, like, good, I'm glad that happened to them. I'm glad that such and such got hit by the car because da-da-da-da-da. And the nicest people can say the cruelest things. Mm-hmm. So yes, empathy is one of the first things to go. And if you keep riding on that and let the lack of empathy grow in you, that can turn into dehumanization. Then we could start to look at other people and other groups as not even human. And I'll just use a real obvious example. That would be like gangs. If you're in a gang and you see a member of another gang, that's immediately amygdala reaction, right? Plus it's learned behavior that those are our enemy. We have no empathy. If a gang member's mother dies, we could care less. And then it definitely goes into dehumanization. And when we're in that state of dehumanizing other people, that's when violence kicks in. It kind of can kick in before that, but that's when we don't care if we've killed someone.
That gets, that derails pretty quickly, doesn't it?
It does.
In those types of situations.
If we don't have awareness. Yeah, if we don't have awareness, which is something that we'll talk about a little later, is having the awareness and what to do to stop these things. You know, it's really going to be refreshing, I think, for your listeners, viewers, to know that we do have the power to change this. People change all the time. Groups change all the time. A lot of people that thought that they were against this group over here found out by getting to know them that they weren't evil to begin with. And it was actually fun to get to know them. And it's actually wonderful to get to know what they eat. Where did they come from? What do they believe? We don't have to take that like, oh, they don't believe like us. We can say, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I had to do that, you know, and talk about politics a little bit, just touching on it, not going into right or wrong or the two sides. Yeah. But there were so many situations where someone would have an opinion and it was very different from my opinion. And so instead of going to that place, I just like, okay, it starts in my heart, right? It's got to start in my heart, that acceptance. I just said, so, you know, tell me more about why you feel that way. And why do you feel like that's going to happen? All right. And how do you feel about this? And, you know, it turned out that none of the things that person was saying were really based on fact at all, but I wasn't there to judge that. It was just more like, okay, I respect this person's opinions. I respect the differences. Who am I to say what's right or wrong? I mean, I have my own sense of right and wrong for sure, which is a different thing. But when it comes to situations that are charged, emotionally charged, like politics, that really brought a lot of divisiveness between people, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So I want to commend you on something. You have an inner belief system that supports that even if you're with someone who is different than you and who believes differently than you, you're always going to respect their humanity. You're always going to respect them as a soul. And nothing they're going to say is going to cause you to lose empathy for them or dehumanize them. That's coming from you, Tony, and that's beautiful.
Thank you. That's a huge compliment. And it's something that I can't say I was ever really aware of, but I remember just this funny little story. I was in high school and it was actually junior high school, Morgan Hill, tiny little town, just cowboys. And, you know, it was so basic and it was a very small school. And I remember there was this one boy and, you know, we were probably, 11 years old or something like that. And no one would talk with him. And they were afraid of him because he was different. He had some mental challenges. He was much younger emotionally than he was in age. And so he had a weight problem and he had acne and, you know, it was just like people would tease him. Kids were very unkind. So here's another type of divisiveness, right? People were really, really unkind to him and he would eat strange food. And I just remember one time I went up to talk with him and people were so surprised that I did that. And he asked if I wanted to share his sandwich. His name was Randy. He asked me if I wanted to share a sandwich. And I remember it was tuna and mustard and something weird.
Tuna and mustard?
Tuna and mustard. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Randy. But no, I'm fine.
What a universal
Yes, it was. But what was really lovely about it is that it taught me, especially when people started giving me feedback. Oh, Tony, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, boy, you're nice to him. No one else is nice to him. They started realizing my behavior as being kind and being accepting. And I thought, and that reinforced when somebody mentioned that to me at that young age, that reinforced, oh, that's a really good thing. I need to keep doing that. Yeah. But it just raised my awareness, you know, around it.
Oh, that's a lovely story. I mean, that's one of the most violent places on the planet are elementary schools.
I know. Do you know how much gum was stuck in this air as a kid?
I had braces and I remember someone walked by me when I was laughing and their sweater got hooked up.
We have so many so many boo-boos from elementary school, don't we?
Yeah.
I think we all have them.
A story that kind of piggybacks on your story is when I was working at this school in San Jose and working on teaching them impulse control and empathy and using the puppets and stuff. I was watching this little boy, I think he was only in first grade, and he had this turban on, you know, beautiful little boy. And another little child went up and said, "Where are you from?" And he thought for a minute and then he went, "I'm an American."
How cute.
I just love kids.
I'm an American.
He did the whole hand thing. It was just really beautiful.
That's adorable.
I'll forget him. I wonder where he is now. He's probably just as happy to be an American now and being a really wonderful citizen here.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. And hopefully feels included as he should be. Mm-hmm. So we talked about social media a little bit. Are there any other types of scenarios that you think people can relate to around this?
Probably let's talk about social media for a minute. Do you mind?
Because yeah, that's important, I think, because so many, especially right now, just interject. So many people are isolated. They're at home. Mm-hmm. We're a year into COVID. We still have a little ways to go making progress. Mm-hmm. But for some people, and I know many of them, some women that live alone, some men that live alone, mm-hmm. isolated, can't see their children. So social media, people are, I think, more sensitive right now and more isolated. Yeah. So when somebody says something, they don't realize that their words have power.
Absolutely. And especially after the last years we've been through with both sides politically, because that's a very big thing on social media right now. So I just wanted to let you know that when someone is posting something, for example, on Facebook, let's say, and if they're in their limbic mode, their amygdala is going off, they're all upset about something. So the first thing they do is go post something horrendous. When we're around people who are limbic, we get limbic. Our amygdala, it's a brain reaction, even if we're seeing it in writing. When we read these kind of posts, it smacks us in the face if it's not our group posting, if it's not about, or if it's against our group, right? And that goes for both sides. So when people post, we have to be aware that when you log on and you think you're just going to scroll through and see whose birthday it is today and all these other horrendous things come up, that we have to know that we have been hit by that. It's almost like you're getting slimed by it. And if you read something that's against your group, so to speak, you have the limbic response that you want to go get them. You're going to show them. And if we're not aware of that, we will. And how many Facebook posts have there been about people arguing over politics? It's mostly politics right now. At least for my, you know, Facebook friends and whatnot, I don't see arguments about religion. There's definitely problems with governments. I just want people to have awareness that when you see something like that, that sets your hair on fire, go take a break, go outside, do some deep breathing, tell yourself you just went in fight or flight mode, validate your own feelings, by the way. We don't want to ignore them. You say to yourself, okay, that made me really angry. This person's always posting things that's very insulting. When I calm down, I'm going to decide what I want to do on that. Do I need to keep them as a friend, but not follow them anymore? Maybe I need to take a break for a week or two on that.
And I've seen people do that, take breaks. And good for you. Come back when you calm down.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh, uh-huh. So bottom line is, if they're limbic, we can go limbic and we can be just as obnoxious in how we respond to those things. And then just even the energy of that is horrible energy. It's almost like being, you know, landing on a porcupine or something like that. And it can ruin your day. And for some people, it can ruin their week, you know. And there's been lots of relationships that are lost. And then we just stumble onto the same thing again. Now there's no empathy. We're mad at that person. Now we don't care if their mom died because they said this about our group. And we can go on and there goes division again. So impulse control on our part. Just because someone else went limbic doesn't mean that we have the right to retaliate.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have just seen so many times where I might want to respond to something and I will respond in a good way, but then I'll say, well, you know what, let me just think on that. And then something more amazing comes to me. And it's not even like it's my first response wasn't a positive response, but something, if you just give yourself a little bit of time, my body's getting all goosebumpy right now. That happens when I'm feeling like I'm on some like real deep truth for me, is that something even better will come, some creative idea for them, something that that is meant to be said to them that maybe I wasn't tapping into before. So sometimes I'll just stop and wait, like, you know, is that really a thoughtful response? If it's something easy, yes, but sometimes there's something so much deeper and so much more helpful and so much more supportive without judging. And you know, just to give ourselves time for that to come into us, that creativity or that intuition or whatever people want to call it, to share that. And just to me, that is just such a great way to not only not go into that fight or flight reaction, but to turn it, to transmute it and make it into something way better than it even could have been. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And they will feel, even if it's a written form, but especially if you're speaking with each other, they will feel that, and they might not be consciously aware of it, but that you did not go limbic. They will feel that you found your centered, authentic self. Some people call that higher self. And that will help them relax. Because when we're in our centered, higher self, our calm self, that spreads just as much as the going limbic kind of energy. So you knew that you can change your energy. You slowed down the process. You became very mindful. Then you drew on your experience. Like, you probably had times that you slipped into fights with people. We all have. And that taught us, well, that didn't get us very well. We just made the problem bigger by retaliating and fighting and, you know, back and forth. So those kind of experiences are actually kind of good if we're willing to learn. Like, okay, now we know that didn't work. That made the problem bigger. I'm going to slow down, get into my centered self, and I'm going to bring in good energy. I'm going to bring in humbleness. I'm going to bring in respect. Yeah, we can't do this with everybody. I should probably put a little commercial break in here that you and I are talking about not being divided. Again, if someone's really dangerous, we're not going to go talk to them and try to not be divided with them. Or if someone in your presence is really thoroughly limbic, sometimes the best thing to do is just back away until they can calm down. And then you have the opportunity to ask yourself, should I ever talk to them about what just happened? Or should I just kind of let that spin around their head? Does that make sense? So not everybody has the potential for a kind conversation with us. And even when they calm down, some people aren't. But you and I are on our way one by one to help people to overcome that so that we don't have individuals or groups that develop into those bad habits of division mentality. It's almost like an addiction.
Right. People do get addicted to their emotions, and I was reading a book, it's by Joe Dispenza, called Becoming Supernatural, and he's talking about how these emotions are actually the result of chemical releases in our brains, or serotonin and all these other, you know, chemicals, and that these emotions, that we get addicted to these emotions and our bodies want to produce these particular chemicals over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it's like that sense of familiar. And I think we do get addicted to that. So I think that it's such an incremental process, like anything, learning how to do this. It's not, I don't think someone wakes up one morning and says, oh, I'm going to be, you know, I'm not going to buy into this fight or flight thing. They'll just, you know, be aware of it, catch it when it happens. Say, okay, I could have handled that better. I'm going to learn from that. But it takes so much too. It takes so much humility, like you were saying, and humbleness to really look at yourself honestly and say, you know what, I could have done better with that, right? Yeah. Without beating ourselves up. I think we need to be loving and kind to ourselves too. But I think it is, for me anyway, I can't speak about other people, but it's such an incremental growth emotional growth process, I guess is the way I can put it for myself.
Well said.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, that's well said. And back to people who are limbic, which is all of us at times, a lot of times, like what leads people into being divided? What leads people into, like, for example, posting all day long horrible political things about another group? When you look at it, you know, a lot of times these people can have an emotional problem or a huge lack of security. It's possible that they got thrown off their center or their authentic self because maybe they didn't have role modeling how to find it to begin with. There's people who can have anxiety and depression. A lot of those are not divisive people, but sometimes having untreated anxiety or untreated depression could throw us off, and our vantage point can be off then. And so when we see people posting like this, rather than meeting them where they're at and posting right back to them, we don't want to slip into that. And that's where maybe some empathy can come in. Like sometimes you'll meet someone who, well, there's someone that I knew in another neighborhood. I'm not going to mention any names.
And I might know them.
Yeah. She was cruel all the time. Anytime there was a neighborhood gathering, she would actually show up and start bawling people out, screaming, you know, and the neighbors were angry at her. I mean, she'd even yell at Girl Scouts that knocked on her door, you know, so all the moms learned, don't go to that door. So we've got huge division. What is the root of that? Well, I don't know exactly because she's not my client. I haven't taken a history on her, and that would be the fair thing to do, but I'm not going to do that. But it's probably that, like the little boy that you went and visited with, this person started down a path of something in their environment hurt them. It hurt, layered upon hurt, layered upon hurt, and fear involved, huge defense mechanism. And when we get wounded like that, a part can form. It's a defense mechanism that's a very angry part. Because if you keep being angry at people, now you're not going to get hurt wherever that originated from. So I look at her, I mean, it's really hard to not yell back when she's screaming at kids and, you just don't want to buy into it. And she hasn't done that for a while, but people were afraid of her and people were disgusted by her and angry. And I totally understand all those emotions. I felt them too. But at the same time, I looked at her and I thought, I still don't want her to get by what she's doing. We still have to protect innocence. But at the same time, what created that in her? And how can we stop that from other little girls that are growing up now that could turn out the same way? Is there any way that we can bring respect to this child who's maybe being abused at home that started that whole process of that cruelty? You know, because that's not necessarily our natural way of being, is being cruel. It's actually exhausting. If you woke up every day and you said, I'm going to be really cruel and mean to people all day, it's really exhausting to be, because it's not your centered self. It's a defense mechanism. And it takes a lot of energy. You know, it's like the sci-fi movies that they have to put a lot of energy in the shields.
Right.
You know, it's exhausting.
Uh-huh. For any of those Trekkie fans out there. Exactly what you're talking about. Uh-huh.
So it's a little hard to have empathy with someone who's that far gone, but that is the kernel of the problem. And once in a while, those people can even turn around. Like if they start their defense mechanisms by screaming at people starts to rebound back onto them. And now they're even in more pain. If they're in enough pain, they'll go talk to a mental health professional and start to unpack this and get down to the core of it and find out who they are and have a chance for a new life. I've seen it happen over and over and over again. And I wish that could be on all the national news networks. You know,
wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, I know several people who are going through depression right now. Many people that are isolated and they get very, just in the course of my life, I can think of many who get very stuck in the hurts of the past. Mm-hmm. And I went through hurts as a child when we lived in Morgan Hill. I had a family. My mother had a lot of anxiety and depression, and our family, we were also the victims of domestic terrorism where someone threw a tear gas bomb through my bedroom window when I was like 12.
Oh my God.
In the middle of the night. And I was in a bunk bed, the upper bunk, and my younger sister was in the lower bunk. And we were just terrorized by this family who had 10 pit bulls who'd bark all the time. And my mom had all this anxiety and couldn't sleep because of it. It was just this, all this chaos. And I remember in my 20s, and my mom had left for Mexico, right? So we were kind of abandoned in a way. And I just didn't have a lot of support. And I just remember into my teens and into my 20s, I think I'd meet someone and I would say, this happened to me and this happened to me. It was like, I wasn't me. I was this thing that happened to me.
Yeah,
and it took me a long time to realize like that I was introducing myself as this person that was a victim, but, you know, survived from a situation. Mm-hmm. And then finally it was, oh, I can just put that behind me. That's something that happened to me. That's not me. but it took a lot of years and I did not have professional help. It just took a lot of years to get through all that layering of hurts, you know, year after year, right? Yeah. So when I see people that are depressed, I just wonder, and I see that they're stuck. Do you have any advice for what that person can do? And I know it's not divisiveness per se. It's more like they're very isolated because they've lost friends, right? Mm-hmm. They're kind of in this very separate, separate space in a way, which is unfortunate.
Right. Well, first of all, I'm really sorry that happened to you when you were a little girl. I mean, no matter what age, that's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
And it truly is traumatizing. And it only makes sense. I totally understand why you would introduce yourself with that, because it's painful and we carry that painful energy with us and it hurts to have it. So if we meet someone who we think is nice, we could start to just talk to people about it. That's, you know, it's like a natural inclination to try to get that out of you.
So yeah, I think it was purging. It was a got to get let go of this somehow.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
sure.
Well, thank you.
And, yeah. And, a lot of people are going through, well, let me just finish on you a little bit. I really appreciate that you went through that trauma, developed awareness that you are more than your trauma, and then you made a decision to not emulate those neighbors. You were around a whole bunch of energy that was very violent, sociopathic energy.
Yes.
I don't know how they're not all in jail or prison for that. And you decided to turn 180 from that and bring good from that and to look at others and learn about what others might be feeling in their environment that when they're sad or scared. And then you bring healing energy. Everyone has the power to do that.
Yes,
yeah.
True.
Yeah. That sounds like a real gift that you're able to come from it. I mean, some children, for example, children who are physically abused and emotionally abused at the same time, they can actually become sociopathic themselves. And if we don't get to them by a certain age, it's really hard to undo that and get them to learn how to empathize again. So there is kind of a window when people have been through trauma, but you didn't need that. You found your way out anyway.
I did. And just a small little story about that is that years later, and I was, I think, 17 years old and I was a waitress. And you know, this happened in Morgan Hill, but I was going to college in San Jose. And I'm in this restaurant and who comes in? The gentleman that threw the tear gas bomb and his wife. And they sat at my table. And I just remember him being mean and surly and just you look into his eyes. And I think I saw some evil there. I really did.
Yeah.
And, you know, my takeaway was I gave him the best service. I didn't let him know who I was. He never would have known. And I just remember thinking, wow, you've got to be in some sort of hell to be him.
Yes.
Like, really?
Yeah.
He's the one that has to live with himself and his wife lives. And then I just felt this empathy for her, especially, and for him who's trapped being this person. I guess I had a different look at other people young because of those experiences. And I don't know that, and I know that experiences in the past, they make us who we are today and based on how we deal with them, how we respond to them, right?
Thanks for listening in to part one of Tony Talks Humanity Matters.
Be sure to check back with us for part two, where we continue our conversation about how to help unify people and divisiveness and recognize triggers that cause our primordial brain to react. It ends in a beautiful meditation. So I will see you there.